Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, I'm going to dive into the mailbag, and then I'll talk about some of the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and it's just me today. This is going to be a very short episode because Ryan Scott was going to be joining me, but he's not feeling well, so I hope he is on the mend quickly. Before I get into the news, I want to kick things off with a couple of emails we received recently. Arkadiusz from Poland wrote in to add one more movie to the list of largely wordless montage films that we've talked about previously on the show, like Koyaanisqatsi. Arkadiusz says, I was tuning into the February 19th episode of Slash Film Daily, where you and Brad chatted about Samsara and Kronos. It got me thinking about Baraka, another stunning film by Ron Frick that sits right between Kronos, 1985, and Samsara, 2011, on the timeline. Maybe it's just me, but I was surprised it didn't come up in the discussion. For those who haven't seen it, Baraka is a 1992 documentary that takes viewers on a visual journey across 24 countries. Without any dialogue, it beautifully showcases diverse cultures and breathtaking landscapes, all captured in rich 70mm film. The title Baraka means blessing in Sufi, which perfectly matches the film's vibe. Interestingly, both Baraka and Samsara are interconnected through their creators, Ron Frick and producer Mark Magidson. While Baraka explores the essence of life and the human experience, Samsara delves into the cyclical nature of existence, as its Sanskrit title suggests. In various Indian religions, Samsara refers to the continuous cycle of birth, death, and rebirth, highlighting the impermanent nature of the world. This theme is vividly portrayed in the film's exploration of the interconnectedness of life and the perpetual flow of existence. Thank you so much for that message. And for anyone who might have enjoyed those other films that we mentioned and recommended, be sure to check out Baraka. And then Monica wrote in with an Oscars reaction. She writes, I believe that Timothy Chalamet's performance in A Complete Unknown will be discussed in film and acting classes for years and years to come. What he has been able to achieve in that performance, especially considering the incredible range in his body of work, is truly remarkable. His acting, singing, guitar, harmonica, and piano that he performed live, playing simultaneously while singing, his hard work and determination over the course of years is just incredible. His performance has endeared a whole new generation to the spirit of this music at a time when it couldn't be more important. The whole cast and production team under the helm of James Mangold created a truly powerful work of art. And I'll say that Timothy and Demi Moore not getting the awards feels a little like the Oscars were trying to make the point that their films were making. Okay, thank you for that, Monica. I see the argument about how Mikey Madison winning Best Actress over Demi Moore reflects the substance, but I must admit I don't immediately understand how Adrian Brody beating Chalamet in Best Actor reflects A Complete Unknown. I'm not a big Bob Dylan guy, as I've said on the podcast before, so I looked up his Grammy track record in real life, and it looks like he was nominated four times between the start of his career in 1963 and 1970, and didn't win his first Grammy until 1973. So maybe that's what Monica means with Timothy getting a nomination, but not a win this time around. So anyway, just wanted to address that. Thank you, everyone, for writing in. You can always write us an email at bpearson@slashfilm.com, and chances are very high that we'll read it on the show. Okay, I'm going to run very quickly through a few news items just to keep everyone up to speed. I wanted to shout out Michelle Trachtenberg, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Gossip Girl star, who died last week at the age of 39. Very sad stuff. I don't believe a cause of death has been announced yet, but just kind of a devastating loss for people like me who grew up in the 90s and watching movies, and her work as Harriet the Spy in particular made a huge impact on me. I read that book. I watched that movie a bunch. I had my own little notebook that I was carrying around and pretended to spy on people and all that kind of stuff. It was like a very, very influential movie for me. And I know a lot of other people who are in my generation feel the same way. So it's just a terrible loss for Michelle Trachtenberg. She was in a bunch of TV and movies, and she did not make it into the Oscars in memoriam montage, which I know rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I have no idea if they thought of her more as a TV actress and that's why she didn't make the cut, but there were people like Tony Todd who also didn't make the cut there. Tony Todd, famously of Final Destination and the original Candyman, he was like a genre legend. So the fact that he didn't make it in either, I know there are omissions every year, but it was kind of a little bit of a fresh wound for that death to not make it in the cut, especially with like Gene Hackman getting a lot of attention. I mean, he was an Oscar winner, so I expected that to happen. But for Trachtenberg to be left out there is just unfortunate. So rest in peace to her. On the totally opposite end of the spectrum, Jason Statham is about to appear in The Beekeeper 2. So this is something that we had been expecting to happen for a long time. And now the official announcement was made that The Beekeeper 2 is in development. David Ayer, who directed the first movie, I believe they're looking at him to come back in some sort of producing capacity. Kurt Wimmer, who wrote the first movie, is coming back to write the screenplay for the sequel. But the director of The Beekeeper 2 is going to be Timo Chianto, who directed The Night Comes for Us, and he is directing Nobody 2, which stars Bob Odenkirk. So he is like one of those guys who is a genre filmmaker who loves leaning into like incredibly gory, hardcore action sequences. So it'll be really interesting to see how he pairs up with Statham, because I kind of think of Chianto as more of like a kind of like a down and dirty, grittier filmmaker. And as much as I love Statham, I mean, I think it's probably fair to say that at this point in his career, he's definitely making smaller action movies for the most part. But like, there are tiers of action cinema, and any hardcore action fans will tell you there's like the direct-to-DVD stuff for the real sickos, and that kind of feels like a little bit more of where Timo is in his career, like the kind of stuff that's just truly messed up and like really pushing the boundaries in interesting ways. And then there's stuff like the Statham movies, which again I love for the most part, and I really had a lot of fun with The Beekeeper, but like there is a I guess a sheen to those types of movies that I don't necessarily associate with Timo's movies. And I haven't seen all of his stuff, so maybe that's an unfair categorization. But anyway, I'm just curious to see what he does with like a big star like Statham in that action space. So I believe Nobody 2 is supposed to be coming out in August of this year. And The Beekeeper 2 does not have a release date yet. It just got announced that that it's officially happening. So there's that. The Lord of the Rings, The Hunt for Gollum, was originally supposed to come out in December of 2026. And according to Andy Serkis, who is reprising the role of Gollum and also directing the movie, that's actually not going to be coming out now until December of 2027. He said that at a Fan Expo Vancouver 2025 panel recently. He said, "We're right at the beginning of the writing process. We'll be prepping later this year. Prep takes a good chunk of time, 6 or 7 months, and then we'll be shooting next year." So it backs into that December 2027 release date. You can read more about what that movie might actually be about at the article that I will link to in the show notes. And then just a couple more news items here. So Disney Animation has abandoned long-form streaming content, starting with a Tiana show that they announced 5 years ago in 2020. So Walt Disney Animation Studios is not going to be making long-form TV stuff directly for streaming anymore. I'm not sure exactly if that, I mean, I suspect that has a lot to do with the budgets that kind of get out of control on these animated projects, especially from a company like Disney. Maybe they think they have enough there where they don't need a show like this that could potentially be pretty expensive to try to draw in new viewers, new subscribers. But man, it really sucks that this is happening to a Tiana show, because Tiana is the princess character that appeared in 2009's Princess and the Frog. And yet again, it's just one of these projects that is led by, or should have been led by, a person of color that is kind of falling by the wayside. And it's just really unfortunate. And I think if you look back at Disney's history, you'll see that this kind of thing happens to projects like this, I guess, more often than not. So just a bummer there. I wanted to mention that A24's Barney movie, yes, I don't know if you've forgotten about this. I kind of had. Daniel Kaluuya is making a Barney movie based on, yes, Barney the Dinosaur, teaming up with Mattel Films and A24, and Kaluuya is going to be producing this. This movie now has a writer, and it's Iowa Debris from The Bear. And that, folks, I just don't know what to say about this. This is very unusual, but this is going to be leaning into the millennial angst of this property instead of fine-tuning it for kids. It's going to be aimed primarily at the 30-something people who grew up with Barney and the disenchantment within the generation. And so Iowa Debris coming off The Bear, and she's got this movie Opus coming up, and She was in Big Mouth, and she was in Inside Out 2, and she's just been in a bunch of stuff, and Bottoms, of course. I really, really am a big fan of what she's doing, and I guess if she is putting pen to paper for this project, or whatever the equivalent is of typing up the words for this screenplay, then that tells me to pay attention to this thing, because I definitely was not really going to be tapped into a Barney movie, because Barney kind of passed me by when I was younger. I guess I was like a little bit too old for it, but man, I don't know. Now that you've got people like Daniel Kaluuya and Ayo Edebiri on board and A24 behind it, I guess I'm going to have to give this some of my attention. So there's that. And then the last thing that I wanted to mention is Ryan Scott wrote an article called "The Oscar Weekend Box Office Highlights a Huge Problem for Movie Theaters." And I'm not going to try to do Ryan justice by getting into all the points that he would have made on this episode. I'll just try to point people to that article where he makes those points very finely himself. So I encourage people to check that out if you are interested in box office stuff, because that's probably all the box office talk that we're going to have on the show this week. Okay, like I said, shorter episode. Thank you all for listening. You can find more about all these stories at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.